And welcome to another episode of that 401k podcast. Ari Rosenbaum along with Dan Venturi. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ari. How have you been?
Since the day it's been less than a day since I've seen you. I've been pretty good. Kids are taking their finals in middle school, so I got to juggle a lot. And, we got this podcast and,
How was Cracker Barrel?
Cracker Barrel? Who goes to Cracker Barrel? I didn't go to Cracker Barrel.
Where'd you go?
Where?
Yesterday.
Oh, Crate and Barrel. What are you talking
about? Crate and Barrel. Yeah. Sorry.
I had to pick up something my wife ordered for the outside.
Did it work out?
Yeah. They had only two items left. She ordered online. They said it was out of stock. Then it was in stock, whatever. And I went to Manhasset to pick it up.
So this is where I'm going to make you envious, because you know who I had lunch with, don't you?
Yes, I gave up that opportunity.
Yes. So for all of our listeners out there, my good friend Ari gave up an opportunity to have lunch with the Rudy Rudiger, the guy from the movie. I went and had an awesome time. Got to meet a childhood hero of mine. I will say, he is every bit of 5'5", 5'6". He is not a tall man. Fire hydrant, built like a, shoulders, big broad shoulders, but not the tallest guy. But a really cool dude. So he's running around, aside from doing sort of a one-man sort of show with movie cuts, an interview subject. They got a show where they play the movie and they have an 80-piece orchestra do the music.
Oh,
and he showed me a clip. They've sold out, 5,000 person arenas.
One of these days I'll actually see the movie. I still haven't seen
You haven't seen the movie?
I know, it's college football and I don't know. And that's why I didn't want to go. That's why. That's
one of my.
When I had the shot to see him, I said, who cares?"
It was awesome, and our friend Larry, was doing his thing. He got the whole restaurant, pictures with Rudy. People were coming in. Friends of the owners' families were coming in to get autographs, take pictures with him. It was a really cool hour and a half.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and we had a good time in Denver for that 401k conference, and that was a solid event.
Definitely solid event. Lots of good people. The altitude kicked my ass. I am not ashamed
It kicked my ass. It was one of my famous 25-hour trips when I go back and forth in 25 hours or less. And I went to sleep. We met at that bar, which did not have any bottled beer or beers on draft. So that kind of threw me for a loop. I had a Peroni, and a Peroni is a good beer, but in a can it's not, just like every other canned beer. And I went to sleep and then woke up. I'm like not feeling well. And, I chalk it up to the altitude.
Yeah, the altitude is rough. The altitude is definitely rough. And then, just our luck, right? We go to a Rockies game,
yeah,
Padres, sad. Rockies. Game's moving along, right? A lot of home runs. We saw Desmond, right? Ian Desmond.
Yeah.
Hit a 3-run inside the park home run, which was awesome, exciting. A couple of left the yard the traditional way. So Ari had a flight to catch. JetBlue was a little delayed, so he got to hang around a little longer. But, we decided the top of the ninth was the time to go. Well, little did we know, an 11-4 Rockies lead would pretty much disintegrate by the time we got back to the hotel.
It was funny.
It was
16-12. But the funny part was, I this was the first time I took a Lyft because I'm always wary about Lyft and Uber. I don't know. I always feel like there's like a homicidal maniac driving these cars. Anyway, so I took one. And by the time the guy drives the two blocks to the stadium, he's like, "Oh, what was the score?" I'm like, 11-4. Unless they're the Mets, they're not going to blow it. And then, of course, I'm by Coors Field, and I get your text. It's tied 11-11. I'm like, what the heck happened?
I did the same thing. A bunch of young kids I rode the elevator up with them, and they asked me what the score was. It's like, yeah, Rockies won 11-4. Right? Not a second thought. unpredictability of baseball. And
unpredictability of Coors Field and the bowl Coors and Field. The humidor, you know, the humidor and, you know, the altitude and all that kind of stuff.
And then crappy relief pitching. And there you go.
Yeah, no Jarvis Familia, surprisingly.
So. But all in all, though, another great event. Ryan Spielberg's was awesome.
Yeah, he was an interesting guest because when they were first, Larry first presented to me, I'm like, who? What? I mean, who's this guy? And I'm like, I didn't know he was on the 2007 NL Champions. I thought he was a great guest, you know, talking about the whole underdog situation, which we've been talking about last day or so, especially since you met Rudy. I thought he was a great guest. And the tour was great. And all in all, it was a fun time. And we, you know, looking forward to it, we take the summer off. And September 20th, we do it again in Cleveland, Ohio, which should be a lot of fun. And ticket prices are less there than Colorado. Who would never thought that? But I got to order a bunch of tickets for our event. September 20th, Progressive Field, Cleveland, Ohio. We'll have game tickets. It's a lot of fun, of course. October 11th, our first football event at Gillette Stadium. Trying to book November 9th at MetLife Stadium. We'll make sure when we confirm that. And December 13th in AT&T Stadium in Dallas, Texas, Arlington, Texas. And let's not forget that 401k National Conference, March 10th and 11th, 2020, Disney World, Swan. So,
And I will say this, guys, if you're going to – and please, come to Cleveland, right? It's going to be another awesome conference. But if you are going to come and you want a game ticket, let Ari know. We've had some – I don't want to call them issues, but we've had certainly miscommunications where folks had said they were going to go to the game and they didn't. And logistically, it's just a pain in the butt. So if you want to take full advantage of the, you know, everything that's built into the conference, please do. We love hanging out with you guys at the ballpark. Maybe the Indians, I doubt it, but maybe the Indians will be back in some sort of wild card race. So hopefully there'll be some good ball, but just please, you know, if
no,
you,
I think I was a little too, you know, I expected more of a crowd to show up. So next time, you know, buy less tickets, whatever. It's no problem. You live and learn. But, you know,
just be cognizant. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. It's against the Phillies, and we know how much I love the Phillies. So it's going to be a great event. Don't know the guests yet. We're working on it. It's always a lot of fun. And, you know, you're talking about $100 for a C-note to have a tour, you know, lunch, 4 hours of content, stadium tour, and a game. I mean, it's a lot of bang for your buck. I had Michael Webb from Kamek came from New Jersey. He was going to be in Denver anyway for a conference, and he was just like amazed, like what kind of value he got out of the conference and how much fun he had. And you know, that's what it's all about. It's a memorable event. You learn a lot. And you have fun, and you can't really say that with a lot of 401k advisor events, you know. I've never had any fun at any other advisor events. So it's a great opportunity. So anyway, for this week's episode, we're going to talk about, you know, the issues dealing with missing participants, automatic rollovers, uncashed checks, that sort of thing. And the reason we bring it up for two reasons. Number one, the Department of Labor has really specified that this is a area of the law that they're going to seek, take a closer look at. And number two, FPS Trust. That's who they are, right? FPS Trust, right?
FPS Trust.
Yes, we are working with them on a IRA program dealing with missing participants and dealing with all aspects of the whole process that, you know, plan sponsors really neglect and don't really think about and really don't talk about. And the problem is that missing participants is becoming an issue because the Department of Labor is saying that it's becoming an issue. And, you know, the problem with most plan sponsors, they contact participants to take their money. the participants that they don't hear back from, they don't follow up with, and then all of a sudden these people become missing for some reason or another, and it becomes a headache. And plan sponsors usually only take care of the problem when the plan is terminating. So, you know, this is a compliance issue. In the old days, when we had a missing participant, we just treated them as 100% withholding. And then the Department of Labor said a few years back, it's probably been around 8 or 9 years or maybe 10 years. Actually, I think it might have been 06, saying that we can't, you know, eschew to the state. We can't use 100% withholding. We can't really eschew to the state unless we go through a whole process. And, you know, finding and locating these participants through the internet, through the mail, through whatever type of service. And then, dealing with them and putting in a whole program in place. And I have a terminated plan just recently where the Department of Labor did ask, you know, what did you do with these missing participants? Where did you open up these rollover IRAs with? What are the fees involved? Did you look and vouch for the provider? You know, that sort of thing. So it's becoming a greater issue. And uncashed checks, which we'll talk about, is an issue because it's something that the Department of Labor and the IRS really haven't dealt with. So, Dan, automatic rollovers.
Yeah.
2005, we brought them in. If they're, you know, under the involuntary cash out limit, depending on the plan, you can roll these people out instead of just paying them in cash.
Yeah, the under 5,000 you're speaking to.
Right. It's under five or under one, depending on how the plan document says.
Uh-huh.
So automatic rollovers are obviously a big business. A lot of, you know, a handful of providers, depending on your TPA, depending on the custodian, there may be a preferred provider, but not all providers are created equally when it comes to automatic rollovers. A lot of them just put money in cash, they take $25 out of it, and the former participant doesn't really get any benefit. They don't even generate enough income to pay that $25 fee.
Yep. And, yep, starts eating away in principle.
Well, exactly. It just sits there. You know, I haven't, you know, back in the days when I was a teenager and I could get an IRA, not an IRA, a CD product paying me 8%. Those days are long gone. I used to get like, for a year CD, I used to get like 8%.
Not anymore.
Oh, you haven't been able to do that in 20 years. So, you know, one of the biggest problems is that plan sponsors don't really do anything with former participants. Once they contacted them, the former participant says bye-bye, and we never hear back from them. And really, the Department of Labor wants plan sponsors to follow up, you know, annually with the former participants if they're above the cash-out limit and say, you know what, you got this money here, you know, maybe consider rolling it out. Dealing with plans, I'd rather not deal with the plan assets of former participants. I think they're a bigger headache than they're worth.
Yeah.
You have notice requirements. You have, you know, just these issues dealing with them that, you know, I'd rather have them go bye-bye and then that's it. Adios and out of your hair and not being a compliance headache later down the line.
Yeah. And you know, I think that's what our you know, the product that we're developing with the fine folks at, as I already mentioned, over at FPS, it's going to assist with, right? It's going to be a place where you can dump all that stuff, all those folks that you don't want in the plan. You know, the offerings are at institutional pricing. So in almost every situation I can think of, it's going to be a better deal than, you know, staying and rolling into the provider, the record keeper's default IRA, right? It'll probably be a better deal than most folks can get on the street from their bank or brokerage guy. You know, so it's something that we're excited about. It's going to be a great solution for plan sponsors. We encourage, once we have it up and running, we'll give you guys a lot more information on it. But we encourage you folks in the advisory community to take advantage of it and take that one, you know, completely needless headache away from your plan sponsors, right? Like, there's enough things that we talk about on this podcast. There are enough landmines out there, enough things that can go wrong for a plan sponsor already. And now it's seemingly the DOL is throwing on one more tedious responsibility and therefore corresponding liability that plan sponsors have to deal with.
Yeah, and again, I was involved with this termination, and that's what the Department of Labor asks, you know, how'd you vet this custodian, you know? And I said, well, you know, they're one of the biggest rollover IRA custodians out there. They have a whole process of trying to communicate lost participants and missing participants. And, you know, they are the preferred choice of the custodian, sure, but, you know, they're not making hand over fist when it comes to custodial fees. It's just like $25 or whatever it is. And, you know, the problem is that plan sponsors, again, they don't do anything until they have to terminate the plan. And then that's all of a sudden when they wake up and realize that there are all these missing participants in their plan. It's better, you know, just good habits. It's like kind of like flossing. We don't do it. We really, really should. We really should. And I really think plan sponsors really have to be on top of it. And I think the other big issue is that we talked to FPS Trust about is uncashed checks. And uncashed checks is a big problem. You pay a participant out, they take the check, they don't cash it, it still is sitting there. And the problem is the IRS and the Department of Labor don't give any guidance on it at all, on whether it's a plan asset or not. And, you know, the conservative in me when it comes to interpretation means that if it's still in the plan as an asset, still listed, even though it's on a negotiated instrument, thank you, law school, to tell me that that's, commercial paper, a check, and all this UCC crap that I never really had a use for. But, if it still sits in a plan trust account as an asset, to me it's an asset, even though it was a check issued. And the person who received the check has constructive receipt. That's income. Constructive receipt is income, and it was taxed. There's a 1099. I understand all that. But in my mind, it's still a plan asset. The problem with uncashed checks are, you know, when you're going to terminate the plan and there's still like this whole money that you didn't account for because you accounted for the check being cash even though it wasn't. And, what do you do with it? And the answer is you certainly don't put it in back into the plan. A plan that, a qualified plan is dealing with money that's pre-tax, essentially, it hasn't been taxed. And once it's been taxed, it's no longer suitable for a plan. So to me, best bet is to probably create a Roth IRA. Until the IRS and Department of Labor tells me I can't do that, I think they can. And of course, you know, proper paperwork, good records, setting it up. But, you know, plan sponsors really need to consider that uncashed checks could be a problem. On a large plan, that could be a substantial amount of money. You can't just distribute the money away. It's their participant money. They pay tax on it. You know, you just can't, you know, just debit it out and, you know, do something, whatever with it. It's a headache. And it's another record-keeping nightmare. With this terminated plan, we might have tens of thousands of dollars on cash checks. And, it's looking for a needle in a haystack trying to figure out who didn't cash your check.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a time and there's a time and mailing cost, right? Like, it there's a genuine expense to this exercise.
Oh, absolutely. And it really is a headache. But really, you know, plan sponsors and plan providers really have to be on top of it. They are going to have to understand that this is a big issue because the Department of Labor says it will be. Over time, having experienced the changes in the business and how that's reflected in the Department of Labor audit, you will get more and more questions on the Department of Labor audit about missing participants and what kind of process you have in place and are you following the process. So sitting back and, you know, letting the world roll around you, that's really not the way it can be anymore. The laissez-faire attitude that plan sponsors have about missing participants, it's no longer going to last because you'll see the Department of Labor really cracking down on plan sponsors to develop a process in order to communicate to former participants about their money. And, you know, who knows where that's going to, you know, lead to. But when the remember the old commercials, when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen.
Yeah.
If the DOL talks, people who are plan sponsors and plan providers, they certainly do listen. You can read the tea leaves. This is going to be something that they're going to focus on. If they're going to focus on it, that's something that we should focus on. And that's really the necessity of this podcast. So,
what was the guy's name? Something Houseman?
John Houseman. Yes, who was Academy Award winner John Houseman for one of my favorite movies, The Paper Chase, on based on law school. He played Professor Kingsfield. And he was also the grandfather on Silver Spoons. And
yes.
He worked with Orson Welles in the Mercury Theater, you know, the whole War of the Worlds and all that kind of stuff. He was a player in that. And, of course, his last film role was as the driving instructor in Naked Gun, where he tells the girl to flip a finger
yes.
towards the truck driver.
Remember.
Yeah, so that was him.
Huh?
That was his last film role. So, you know, that's John Houseman for you.
Oh, that's just podcast trivia.
But he didn't do E.F. Hutton. He did, you know, you got it all wrong. He did Smith Barney. We make money the old-fashioned way.
We earn it.
Yes.
So who was E.F. Hutton?
E.F. Hutton, it was just like a guy when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. So it'd be like a commercial of a guy talking and people like hunching down. I think Bill Cosby might have worked with E.F. Hutton at one point.
Oh.
Yeah, well, there's no E.F. Hutton anymore, and as Bill Cosby's in jail. Bill's not going to be endorsing anybody anytime soon.
Yeah, to this day, I look at Jell-O pudding a little differently.
Listen, it is what it is. But, yeah, he did Smith Barney, which is now Morgan right. Stanley. It's not even Smith Barney anymore. So, yeah, that's we got to get our commercial pitchmen right.
Hey, well, from the accuracy department, thank you.
Yes. So that's it for this week's episode. Until next time, we're signing off. Take care.
Have a nice weekend, guys.
Bye-bye.
Happy Father's Day.